Conversations with Friends is a new series.
A series within a series.
Creative conversations between writer friends.
We were blown away by the calibre of the pitches we received from established, mid-career, debut and emerging writers.
From those writing poetry, fiction, non-fiction, plays, newsletters and PhDs.
Conversations to get you through these strange COVID days and beyond.
Sit back, stay home and enjoy. This episode of Conversations with Friends is with Bronwyn Birdsall and Cherise Strange. Bronwyn Birdsall is a writer and digital marketing specialist. Sweet Trouble is her first novel and has been selected for numerous work in development programs. Bronwyn's writing centers around contemporary life, finding meaning in the everyday, and the rich complexities of family and friendship. She is currently working on a collection of non-fiction essays.
Cherise Strange is a writer. She reviews literature of all kinds on her blog, Keeping Up with the Penguins, and on Primer. When she's not giving barely solicited book recommendations to customers at Sappho Books, she's completing a Master of Creative Writing at the University of Sydney and working on her first novels. I have to say, this was such an interesting conversation to listen back to, because just before Bronwyn recorded this with Cherie, she was in the word cave with me that she talks about. So it was kind of just a very strange and delightful and surreal experience to listen to this.
I have heard so much good stuff about this word cave. Do you want to give a little 25 words or less of what the word cave is about? You're sort of shaking your head with
shaking my head with joy. The Word Cave is an online writing retreat run by the US writer Sarah Centilles, and it's a four-day retreat with check-ins with Sarah and the group of other people in the retreat. And honestly, Catherine, I just properly, well and truly fell into my project and just wrote, you know, over 10,000 words in the 4 days. I've got pictures up all over my studio now from stuff I was researching.
I wish you could see your face. It is just like, and Bronwyn describes it in the podcast as writing zone.
Exactly. It feels a little bit cult-like that we've all come out of it going, oh my God, this is insane. But highly recommend it. We'll put some notes in the show notes. There is another one coming up. She runs them separately for Australia and New Zealand because of the time difference. So she's got one coming up. And so we'll put a note in, but just totally, utterly can't recommend it highly enough. And I think, you know, Bronwyn talks about this in this as well. Just she feels like she's kind of in that Zen state as well, a bit like she's still kind of in there.
Well, I think what is a huge endorsement is the fact that our writers group has read the writing on the wall and realised that our November, December retreat is not going to happen. And so we're all going to do the word cave collectively.
I love it. It won't quite be like sitting around in the gorgeous house that we go to around the fire at night, but it will be very bloody close. You know what I loved in the intro to this conversation when Bronwyn and Cherie are talking about, like, this is like sitting at the grown-ups table for them and how many times you and I and other writers we know have talked about, like, not being at the grown-ups table. And I still feel like that in my normal life. Like, often I talk about the adults being my parents' generation.
I know. It's like the thing where you come home from hospital with a baby. You keep just, like, looking at each other going, do they know how irresponsible we are? We are not to be trusted.
So, Bronwyn and Cherie, thank you for thinking that we're the grown-ups. We do not feel like the grown-ups. So it's really nice to be thought of as such.
Looking at you, Kate, I can see your backdrop. You got a very nice backdrop. You got some pictures up, different bits and pieces. Any post-its?
Any post-its?
Cherie talks about her post-it wall. Yeah. How do you feel about a good quote?
Well, I love a good quote. I do have some in front of me here. No, but it's only at the moment I can only see my ABN. But I do like that one that she talks about from Carmen Maria Machado, that idea about giving your characters a role in the hay.
I wrote that down. I liked it so much.
Oh, my goodness. I I think that I was at this event when Carmen was speaking about that. And I've been thinking about this so much recently because I really quite like writing about sex. In my first book, I wrote about the absence of it, or all the characters wanting to have it and them not having it. And then in my second book, they actually have it on the page. But what I've been thinking about as I approach this third book is that waiting for your characters to have sex is kind of this anticipation that can really drive your writing as well. So if you leap straight in, which was my theory this time, just leap straight into the sex scene, write it out, get it out of my system, and then just let the characters get along with what they're actually meant to be doing, maybe that will work. But it hasn't really worked because now I'm just writing them having more sex. So I don't know, but I think it's a great quote, and I think I highly recommend doing that for your characters. They'll thank you for it.
The quote is, give your characters a roll in the hay. They deserve it. I just like how offhand it is too. The final point I had, which I think is a really good point, is Bronwyn mentions the difference between self-doubt and something actually just not being very good, which is a realization I think we all is under-acknowledged in some ways. It's often framed around doubt, but really, sometimes things are not very good. And it takes a long time of not being very good to get a little bit better.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really important. And it's kind of like a whatever the opposite of a sweet spot is, but it's still a sweet spot when you know it, when you can just recognize your own shit for what it is. Do you know the thing that really gave me a surprise in this was when they were talking about hard copy, and these guys are met during the digital hard copy. So you did that, one of the ones where you actually, imagine that, flying somewhere to,
I know,
go to another state.
Well, I remember when that digital hard copy was advertised, and I had done it by then, but it felt so avant-garde, like really sort of
something digitally,
digital version.
But what's so lovely, that's Nikki Heaney, our Nikki Heaney is in that group too.
Yeah.
Such a smart, delightful world. I want to mention one more thing, because Bronwyn talks about how we'd spoken about this idea of going to where the heat is, or hot noticing. And I think you and I have spoken about this before, but I did want to just recommend again, because it's so good, the interview that Charlotte Wood does with Emily Perkins in the writer's room, where Emily Perkins talks about hot noticing. And it's just, it's a great interview. It's a great kind of writing practice to go to the details of things and where the heat is. So I highly recommend that too. Enjoy.
Cherie.
Bronwyn.
Hi. We're on the first time podcast. I can't quite believe it. I don't want imposter syndrome to come out straight away.
But it's totally there.
It's totally there. If you look at all the writers they've featured so far, I mean, what an incredible lineup.
Yeah.
And I guess we're flying the flag for the emerging writers.
Ooh, we've been invited to the, like, it's the first time you sit at the grown-ups table at a wedding.
Yes, exactly.
All your life you've been sitting around with other kids, and now suddenly you're one of the grown-ups.
I actually, you know, I'm fresh. Just an hour ago I came out of this course called The Word Cave. Mm. So I have this kind of zen feeling towards writing and creativity and the potential for like world changing through our words. It's really nice to be recording this now.
Once again, we are the odd couple, but I'm coming to this fresh from work at Sappho Books, where I'm just, you know, mainlining coffee and scrubbing books clean and keeping 8 million plates juggling. And I'm like, yes, writing is where we put words together, and sometimes we do it goodly. So, as always, we bring very different energies to the thing.
We pitched ourselves essentially. So you're the plotter.
As the odd couple. Yeah.
The odd couple.
Yeah.
You're the plotter, I'm the pantser. Yep. Your first novel, what was your first draft? How many words?
Near 170, 180,000, I think.
And mine was like just scraping 60. Just.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you're extremely organized.
I think he came up
organized.
With some really diplomatic way of saying it, that I was highly organized, where most people tend to call me, like, you know, crazy, overzealous, spreadsheet,
monster.
Oh, Cherie, I am so envious. When, like, the amount of times in my life I have started a spreadsheet or a plan, and then awkwardly I'll find it and I'll be like, what is this?
I set this thing up one time. Wow.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm talking in all areas of my life, like with the, you know, my social media clients and everything. We'll start like a calendar, and then I aim for structure, but
I'm the one who's insanely jealous. I actually don't know how I would start my day without my spreadsheets. Multiple spreadsheets.
What do you mean? Well, you have a spreadsheet for the day.
Well, I have like a daily tracker of some stuff on my blog, and then I have another sort of monthly tracker that has sort of a like bunch of daily sort of visions built into it, and then I have my daily to-do list, and I check all of those before I've had two sips of coffee.
Like,
I don't know what I would do if I didn't have that. I would just wake up and how would I know what I needed to do that day?
Can I just respond with, I downloaded an app called Habit app, and every morning it sends me a prompt. Oh, sorry. I have no financial interest in this. And also, you're going to see
why. We are emerging writers. We have financial interest in nothing.
So every morning I get a reminder where it says, tells me that I need to, like, you know, because every morning I do my morning pages, and I need to tick to say I've done it and all these things. And just this morning it did pop up with my daily reminders, which are hilariously, like, I think there's three at the moment, which is like, have you moved your body today?
Oh, God. From bed to couch.
Bed to couch. Have you done your morning pages? Have you done a meditation? Right. These are the three. This is my version of a spreadsheet. And then I looked back and I hadn't, even though I get the reminder, I hadn't ticked it for like 2 months.
Oh, God.
So I have no way of tracking where I am, but...
Oh. I swear, Bronwyn, like, I love you, but every time I talk to you about the way that you write and live your life, I break out in hives.
But there's order to the... I mean, the irony is that I don't... Look, you never know how people perceive you, but yeah. I don't think people... I don't imagine they'd perceive me as a chaotic person. Like,
no,
I don't,
not at all.
I think I might present this very false air of, like, being together. I mean, I don't want to...
Yeah, that's what's so weird, that you have this... you know, aura of being a very put together, like setting up this podcast. You were the one who was sort of the driving force and the organized and, you know, had all the boxes ticked. And I'm the one with all the spreadsheets. And yet I'm like, right, what are we doing it? How are we doing it? What do I click? How do I do it? You know, it's baffling.
Could you imagine riding by the seat of your pants, as they say, the pantser? Have you...
I wholeheartedly reject pantsing as an ethos, but lately I've kind of had to. I'm at a stage with my manuscript where just, I guess I've written two full drafts now, and I know that it's not working as it is and it needs to change, but I've been completing my master's, I've been working, I've been blogging, and I don't have the time that I did when I first started this project to make a spreadsheet or a wall of post-its or do any of the sort of organizational stuff that I would normally do.
Mm.
And trying to find that time meant that the manuscript was just sitting there and that I, you know, hadn't touched it in a couple of months. And I thought, right, the only way I'm going to be able to do this is just start doing it and work it out as I go. So I'm going through sort of chapter by chapter, still methodically, but do you remember the time that you spoke to me and you told me you just, like, I think it was deleted a whole character? Or, no, it was a chapter. You just deleted a chapter just on a whim to see how it goes. And I was, like, horrified. That's pretty much what I'm doing now. You know, I've just hit a chapter in the first third where I'm like, you know what, I reckon this can all just go. I don't think I actually need it.
This great thing, I'm trying not to mention the word cave every 2 minutes, you know, because but I do want to say it's run by Sarah Centiles, and she was this incredible facilitator through the program, and incredible group. And I'm pretty sure she said it, or someone in the group was talking about the heat like the heat of something, like the heat of a text,
yeah.
meaning that when I would have deleted a chapter or a character, it's just that there was, like I didn't have the words to express what it was, but there's no heat in it. Like there's there's no energy in it. Mm. And I think there's something in, for me, I mean, maybe I am very instinctual and of course, and these things, but it's like, you know, when something's just kind of dead on the page, from my perspective, it's like, yeah. you just cut it.
Yeah. Just get rid of it.
Hey, see,
I think I tend to cling to it.
I just realized, Cherie, that like every good conversation, we just go straight in. But I wondered, you tell me, should we tell people how we met?
Yeah, because I think there's just who we are, how we know each other. Who we
are. I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
why spoil a good story with the truth? I mean, we're on a flow. Interestingly, we met in the way that maybe a lot of people are meeting now, which is via, it was a version of Zoom or it was Google Meet. Like we met throughout, even though we lived in the same city, we lived on the same bus line.
On the same bus line. Yeah. The same bus line. The 370 represent.
The famous 370. We met because we were selected for the very first digital group of hard copy.
You know, I did actually think that when, you know, sort of social distancing meant that a lot of meetings and things and conferences and courses went online to Zoom, I kind of felt like an old hand at it because we did that, you know. We
did. And I really respect that. From what I understand, like part of the programming decision around that was around accessibility. Like not everyone can go to Canberra for several weekends for whatever reason. Like there's many reasons.
I wouldn't have been able to participate if not for the digital program. There was just no way that I was going to be able to, you know, financially or physically get there. And so, yeah, the digital program for hard copy opened up a, you know, whole new world of opportunity for me.
From there, created this IRL friendships.
Yeah.
Particularly, you know, that digital group had seven of us, I think, and a few of us, I think we've all kind of kept, six or seven, we've all kept in touch.
Yeah.
To some respect. And then particularly Rain Collins in Melbourne and Caitlin Ziegler and also Nikki Heaney, like that there's this ongoing connection that goes beyond the digital. Because remember, what was so great about it was that we had this ability to be in the room and also not in the room, right? So
I think at the time I said it was like we were sitting up the back of class and we could pass notes to each other.
Yeah.
And we seemed to sort of connect in ways that people there in person, you know, I mean, they connected obviously, but just differently. You know, we had, I guess, more of a offline and outside the classroom relationship right from the beginning. And in that way, I think, you know, we almost got a better deal being able to participate like in the program digitally.
I guess this is the thing, right, as emerging writers, is that these support networks, having that come in, like, you know, I don't think I would have realized I was a pantser until I realized that other people spreadsheeted their books, right? I just thought,
I don't think I would have realized you could write a book without a spreadsheet.
So there's this kind of wild, you know, what's the word? Like mirror. Well, it's not a mirror, right? Because it's like a distortion.
Well, it's going through the looking glass. Yeah.
Even though we have these entirely different approaches, this is what I wanted to touch on, our kind of philosophies are quite similar. Like when we share quotes about writing or, you know, your very famous post-it wall, which I want to talk about.
Yes.
But that, you know, that stuff is actually, it's like a shared language, you know. Yeah. Like I felt like I found my people.
Well, yeah, there's so much that, you know, you and me and the other digitalers, we share with each other. And even though we're all coming at it from sort of very different places and approaches, it still manages to resonate for all of us, which I think is sort of a testament to the strength of, you know, this drive to write and this drive to create that we all have, even though it manifests differently in our process. We're still, you know, drawing from the well.
Hey, congrats on your master's.
Oh, God, yeah. Thank you.
So when did you finish?
So I submitted my last essay on the 20th of June and then results came out a couple of weeks ago. and basically I survived.
Congratulations.
Did quite well. I've got everything that I needed to get. So I guess I'm officially now a graduate, but with the current situation, the unprecedented times as they were, it doesn't look like I'm going to get a graduation ceremony or anything per se. I'll get a piece of paper in the mail.
I was really curious, like, because you started that master's around just after we finished hard copy, I think.
Mm.
What did you get from it? What was the experience like? I mean, I haven't done one. I'm really curious.
Well, I honestly think, I don't think I would have taken the step to do my master's had I not done hard copy.
Mm-hmm.
That hard copy, I guess, was the first kind of course, quote unquote, that I'd done in creative writing. It was the first thing, like, basically since high school with the idea of kind of being in a classroom with assignments or whatever. And then having done that, I realized what a valuable thing it was to, I guess, participate in those kinds of groups and learn in that kind of setting. And I thought, oh, well, bugger it, why not? I'll throw my hat in the ring for a Masters of Creative Writing and see how I go. And I think, yeah, basically doing the Masters of Creative Writing, I don't think it's essential for, you know, I'm sort of from the Liz Gilbert school of thought, I think, where you don't need to do a Masters in order to work or, you know, write creatively. But for me, I found it really valuable, and it has changed my writing a lot. I'm a much better writer than I was 18 months ago. And also, I think, I can't remember if it was you or Rain, but it was one of you I was joking with about, it was like in my head before I started any of this, I had a list of reasons why I shouldn't or couldn't write a book. You know, this was my imposter syndrome manifest that, you know, I couldn't write a book because I hadn't had anything published anywhere. And then I got a short story published. So that was ticked off. And then it was like, well, I couldn't write a book because I didn't have it, you know, a network. I didn't have any writer friends. And then I participated in hard copy and came out with this wonderful group of friends, and through that met more people and so on. And so I sort of kept making my way down through this list. And the last thing was, well, I don't have any qualifications. You know, I haven't studied writing. I haven't studied literature. And now that's ticked off. And that was the last thing that I could come up with as a reason that I couldn't write a book. So now there is literally not one reason.
I love that. You've slayed the dragons. That's what it feels like.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, it does feel a lot like that.
It's so interesting hearing other people's, when people talk about their inner critics, what that sounds like, the voices that it takes, particularly in terms of creativity. When I hear yours, I have so much compassion and space, and I think, I'm not saying it's crazy or something, because, you know, it's your experience.
But oh, it is. It's insane.
But it's so interesting because it's like, but the doubts I've had are legitimate. Do you know what I mean? Like, like when I hear yours, I just think, well, there you go.
Well, I was just going to say, I can't imagine what kind of doubts you've had. What kind of doubts do you have, baby?
Well,
we should tell people we're Bronwyn Birdsall and Cherie Strange, so we get shortened to BB and SS a lot.
SS. Yeah. 23 minutes in, we say our names.
Yeah. Oh, God.
You can see that I worked in branding, right?
Oh, yeah. Professional. Marketing. Branding. Good.
With part of this word cave, you don't have emails. You don't look at your emails. You make a commitment to be off social media and to not look at the news, right? So you're in this very, I was going to say clean, but I don't know if that's the right word.
You're in a cave.
You're in a cave. That's the only word for it, right? And then with that happens, like, especially now, of course, with news, and also because I've worked in social media for so many years, that there's this almost physical need. I mean, I will answer your question.
No, I'm feeling your flow. I'm going with it. I'm nodding eagerly.
No, but like there's this almost physical, I would have this moment, especially on the first 2 days, maybe like at whatever, I mean, 45 minutes or less, there'd be some mark where I'd be like, okay, check the news, check that. And because I wasn't doing that, then I'd be like, oh, I'm not. And then I'd go in and then you'd discover something new in your writing. And I had such, you know, sort of a profound experience. I figured out, and you will appreciate this, like I figured out essentially the mystery of my book that I've been writing for these years. I figured out, you know, what I was writing about. I got an answer to my question. I was just, and, you know, I had this moment at the end where I actually had written everything new that I needed to write because I'm expanding my yeah. manuscript, the timeline. And I wrote, I thought I was done. And then I suddenly just had this moment and I wrote what feels like the right final scene.
Oh, and that's so sexy.
It was honestly, Cherie, I mean, sexy is the word, right? I had this thing, it was just this clarity. And
is it like when you finally finish the jigsaw puzzle, like you finally figure out?
Do you know, jigsaw, that was the exact metaphor I kept thinking. And I kept thinking, it's like I've completed a jigsaw, but I need to paint it. You know?
Because, well, actually, I'm working on a jigsaw puzzle right now that's like a Scrabble one. And not only do you put the jigsaw together, but then the Scrabble board is like a word game and you've got to figure out what words go on it. So there you go. That's your metaphor. You're doing a Scrabble jigsaw.
Yeah. But the thing I was going to say, like, this is, I am coming back to the question about doubt, which is in that moment, it was actual like peace and surrender and
transcendence,
everything, transcendence. And I know I sound like a hippie, but it was just this thing where I was like, oh, everything has come to this moment. And then, you know, all the things that I doubted in the past, which I can, you know, out myself and doubt them, my doubts, you know, but it was really this moment of recognizing that, you know, there's like a purpose to doubt, in the sense of, I mean, maybe that's not true, but like that, perhaps in the past where I've been like, this isn't good enough, or maybe it wasn't good enough. Like,
yeah,
you know, I mean, oh, I mean that very seriously, like, that I'm like, oh, this is what I'm writing about. Like it just clicked. And there was something that came out of having space to do that, that it's almost like what I was going to get at. This is the final point, which is going around in a circle, is that, I think my doubt actually comes out as sabotage. So I don't have necessarily a thought where I'm like, oh, this is, you know, I don't have a writing network, but I might look at Instagram instead of doing my writing.
Yeah. So you sort of shoot yourself in the foot, so then you can't run anywhere.
Yeah. And kind of making that commitment and to the group that you weren't going to do it was really transformative.
I'm so happy for you.
Thank you. It's a really, I want to bottle that feeling, because I know that at some, you know, now I have to go back in and, as I said, paint the jigsaw or solve the word clue, because it's some of the stuff. Some of it's, of course, polished because I had a complete manuscript, but the new stuff still does need a lot of texture and things. But I think, you know, for me, that's why I write, for that. Although I don't know if I've ever had that
feeling. Well, there we go. I think that's on a post-it somewhere, my head somewhere. But the thing of I don't love writing, I love having written.
Oh, yeah. Who said that? That's a famous...
That's a really famous one. I can't remember. It is on my wall somewhere, but I've got over 100 post-its on my wall. Trying to find it's going to be a nightmare. I did pull down a few of my favorites, so I do have them to hand. First one actually went up on the wall during hard copy, and it was something you said to me.
No.
I'm guessing.
Cherie.
I think it was you quoting someone else, in fairness, but I've attributed it to you, because you were the source. And it was, the first draft is for you, the second draft is for your editor, the third draft is for your reader.
Yes, that is definitely, I am not wise enough to have said that.
I've used that so many times that now my own mother says it back to me. That when I talk about how, you know, the second draft of my book didn't go the way that I want it to, she's like, but that's okay. You haven't even reached the draft that's for your reader yet. You know how your friend said in that program you did?
Oh. Do you know what's really beautiful about that, Cherie, is that that's a paraphrase, because I don't want to, you know, obviously I'm not really good at details. It's a paraphrase from Mirelle Day, who's a wonderful, wonderful writer and also a writing mentor up here.
Oh, yeah, that's Byron, right. Yeah.
Shire. And that was my very first ever thing, writing thing back in 2013. When I just moved back to Australia, I was selected with something that hardly anyone had written, hardly anyone had read, sorry, for their residential mentorship. And that was with three incredible writers, you know, have gone on to publish just amazing works. And Mirelle said that to us in, and it was this moment for me where I realized that, you know, first I write for myself, and of course, I mean, there might be more drafts. And I think there was another thing she said about how that first draft would be by pencil or something for her, or there was some other thing. But that was a particularly, I love that one. But more, what else is on the post-it wall?
Well, a few post-its away from that one, I've pulled this one down. It was Carmen Maria Machado. Ooh. I can't remember exactly where she said this, but I think it was on a session. I listened to the recording through the Sydney Writers Festival podcast. Mm-hmm. And there was just this one line that she had that I loved, which was, give your characters a role in the hay. They work hard. They deserve it.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. Love it. She was talking about sort of the awkwardness of writing, or the supposed awkwardness of writing about sex. And, I remember us discussing that with, you know, other hard copy digitalers, that we were talking about, you know, if you got the opportunity to give your character a sex scene, maybe you should. So I've always kept that one close.
I mean, look, even if it doesn't stay in the final manuscript, like, just let them get it out of their system, right?
Exactly, exactly. Let them have some fun, because we put our characters through hell.
It's true. Can I hear one more? Is there one more?
One more here, because it is my favourite. I actually keep it at the top. I have several post-it walls, actually, but at the top of my writing advice post-it wall, I have a quote from Lev Grossman, which is, don't take anyone's writing advice too seriously.
Oh, I love it, Cherie. that's so good.
That's samplings from Cherie's post-its.
I love it.
All right. So accountability-wise, what are you going to do before the next time we speak?
And by speak, you don't mean sending each other jokes?
No.
No. Next time we speak. So I have a very nice structured answer for you, which is that I have that. So my manuscript that I took to hard copy, that I've expanded the timeline on it. So it's gone from 1 day to 4. I've now I've sketched. I mean, I've written all the new scenes, and now I need to go back and, as I said, make those new scenes. So it's very structured. I know.
It's so hard.
It's very structured. I need to give them, because I tend to write, you know, that first bit is very, like, often it's very dialogue heavy. It's very just figuring things out. That's my pantser style. So now I need to go back. And what was the thing from Mirelle, from writer to editor to reader?
Yeah. First draft for the writer, second draft for the editor, third draft for the reader.
So I'm still dwelling on those new scenes in the writer section. Right. And then I'd just like to get them to a point where they'd be good for an editor.
I reckon that's pretty good. I guess my only real commitment at this point is to keep going. And what I commit to is the next time we speak, that I will have progressed. And I think starting to try and let go of the spreadsheets and letting go of, my strict adherence to the post-it notes is the best thing that I can do right now. I'm about 10,000 words into what will now be my third draft.
Wow.
And in a way it feels almost like it's a draft for both me as the writer and me as the reader. I've finally got enough distance from my story that I can tell it in a way that I would want to read it, not just in the way that I want to write it. So I think if I keep following that path, hopefully I'll get to a point where my manuscript is a manageable length and it's something someone someday might actually want to read.
I'm excited to read it. I mean,
you're too kind to me, Bronwyn, that's why.
No, but I mean, this is the thing about, and I think this is a really nice thing to talk about, is that with these writing friendships, it's almost like the writing and the friendship are two different things, right? There's, yeah. We saw Charlotte Wood talk, remember, last year.
Oh God, yes. Yeah.
And remember that thing, they talked about this thing of finding your community and looking for peers.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's this,
I remember you and I sort of looking at each other and nudging each other when they said that.
Yeah. And I think that really is the sort of amazing thing about programs like Hard Copy, is that you slot in with people who are exactly where you are. So, Cherie, we did
Bronwyn,
it. We survived.
BB.
BBSS. So the last time I saw you was when I totally blew my book budget. I mean, if a book budget exists, I don't know.
I think it shouldn't, but that's probably an occupational hazard.
My book budget at Sappho is a wonderful secondhand bookstore where you work. And we said, oh, I'll see you soon. I'll see you later. But of course, you know, things changed. So I can't wait to be able to be back.
We can't wait to have you back at Sappho.
Oh, and the cat and the cafe and all the drinks.
Yeah, well, I've got Sappho coffee next to me, quickly going cold. But it is just as delicious as ever. It'll be here waiting for you when the world lets us see you again.
All right, Cherie.
Thanks, Bronwyn.
I miss you, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, go right.
Yeah, go right. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The First Time Podcast. The First Time Podcast is produced by Phoebe 80 and supported by Writers Victoria, the ACT Writers Centre, and our wonderful patrons. This series is supported by the City of Melbourne through a COVID-19 arts grant.